your Friday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. You can't step on all that. That's good stuff. You can't step on Janet. The Friday Roundtable, three-legged roundtable today, coming in shortly, will be comedian Brian Miller, and also in about 6 or 7 minutes, we should be hearing from Representative Tom Emmer. In regards to one of the top five stories, the guy with the 28 DUIs.
Yeah.
Chad on Twitter, using the hashtag TCNT, says, so Minnesota can take guns for life, but not driver's licenses.
Right.
Yeah, apparently.
Right, that's,
yeah.
That's yeah.
You have a, I don't think you have a like one of the Bill of Rights amendments, you know, right to drive. I don't think that's in there.
That was money. If you missed Rob Dorr on, that Wednesday's show in the 8 o'clock hour. And this was obviously before the, it was timely before the shooting had taken place, talking about the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. But Don from Burnsville had called up and was trying to equate getting a license and being a trucker. And Rob Dorr just did a mic drop on him on that. Being a trucker and having a license is not in the Constitution.
Yeah.
It's not a constitutional right.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, reposted. I think we've done it a few times now, but it is up there now on TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com on the Justice and Drew page is the Reason.com video of what it would take to repeal the Second Amendment in the United States. And it's one of those videos where, you know, if you're of that opinion and you want to, it's like a perfect starting point when you want to talk about gun control.
Yeah.
Because just dismiss that outright because it's never going to happen.
Right.
And it's a great video that really lays that whole thing out.
So they, so they move to this idea that, well, let's just ban this type of gun.
Right.
We realize we can't ban all guns, even though that's what we'd really like to do.
Yeah.
So we'll just ban this type of gun. As if that's going to accomplish anything substantive. That's just makes you feel better.
I'm going to throw this out here real quick, Drew, and we can double back to it because I know we're going to talk to Tom Emmer here in a minute and we have something to cover, but and just let it sit. Backing away from this whole issue, you know, there's one thing that I don't think we focused on nearly enough, and we can talk more about it, and it's we don't pay enough attention to the damage that the mainstream media has done via the coverage post Columbine. When you go back to Columbine and you look at every single event that's taken place since then and the way that the media has covered these stories, you know, people want to talk about how these shootings are happening on a more frequent basis. And there's an article that disputes the 18 mass shootings and, you know, in this year alone. But there has been an uptick. You want to look at the biggest correlation, though? That's it to me. You look at post-Columbine, and ever since then, every single time one of these events happens, it just gets ramped up and ramped up. Aurora, Colorado, and the Dark Knight shooting, same thing. One of the most ridiculous things I ever saw was the coverage of the Aurora, Colorado shooting when all the news crews were sitting in the parking lot of the movie theater, even though the event was over. Like, something was going to happen. Yeah. Why are you there? You've got no reason to be there. And again, we can get into more of this coming up a little bit later on in the hour. Cause I think if you're going to try to point to something that is perpetuating this whole thing, then that's a big, huge component of it.
Yeah. And it's definitely worth talking about. I'm conflicted on this because, you know, you can't not cover
right.
These things. And part of the reason that the school shootings have become sort of a thing is because they've been, I don't want to use the word glorified, but there's been sort of this underground just attention given to them of, well, that's the thing you do if you're disturbed.
Right? Sure.
You know, there's this idea, there's this notion that, you know, troubled kids, bullied kids, whatever, it gets into their head of, well, that's what they did. It's a copycat.
Right. Right.
You know?
When you talk about the media coverage, though, the problem that I have, and this is what we'll get into, is that you had a narrative that emerged yesterday that this guy was part of a white nationalist group. That was debunked. You had the narrative going around, and we've got several examples of it, of Trump refuses to release the photo of a bill that he signed that weakened gun law, which wasn't true.
Right.
So you have the media going after these stories that really have no relevancy that aren't even real to what actually took place. And every single time one of these events happens, this type of thing ends up blowing up an already horrendously awful situation and making it exponentially worse. Yeah. You know, don't go down the extra avenues. You've got plenty of places you can already go.
Yeah, yeah. There comes a point where on Wednesday, you know, when the shooting happened, you know, I was watching coverage, and you get to this point where you have no new information. There's nothing new to report, yet they can't move on to another story.
Mm-hmm.
They can't move on to anything else, so they just sort of start repeating the same thing and doing the reaction, getting people's reaction to that.
Right.
And it's like, I don't find that to be particularly helpful. I don't find that to be particularly compelling, and I wish there was the mindset of the media, you know, in these 24-hour news networks to say, okay, we've told you everything we know. We're going to move on to some other stories, and we will keep updating you as new information comes in. And that's it. Then move on to something else.
You almost need, like, a separate outlet. Like, you need a subsequent... And good morning, comedian Brian Miller.
Hello.
You almost need... Like, every outlet needs to have, like a secondary channel to where... And if you want to go to our wall-to-wall coverage of said event, tune over to, you know, breaking news channel, blah, 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 blah. You know, and again, I'm just throwing that out there because it seems to me like it's... This is a big part of the issue that nobody is talking about, how the media coverage on this just gets bigger and bigger every single time one of these events happen. And I think it's... Personally, I feel like it's perpetuating the problem by bringing kids this idea that if I'm going to go out, I'm going out in a blaze of glory.
It has become a copycat phenomenon. Joining us now, Representative Tom Emmer, as he does every Friday. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
You know, I'm fine. I'm hoping to get on the road and get back here. And it was almost 70 degrees in Washington yesterday.
We like you. Why are you saying things that make me not happy?
Because I can't wait to get home to the the mosquito-less cool air.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that I'll give you.
Yeah.
That I'll give you.
Representative Emmer has Alaskan blood in him. Yeah,
he's I don't know about that, but definitely the thermostat is broken.
He's much more at home in the cold confines of Minnesota.
That's true.
So, big week. We haven't had a chance to talk with you since the infrastructure plan has sort of come into fruition. I'm curious to get your thoughts on Trump's infrastructure agenda and what that might mean here in Minnesota.
Well, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I think it's $200 billion over 10 years in federal funds. The idea is to spur at least $1.5 trillion in infrastructure investments, and they want to have this partnership with state, local, tribal, and private entities. What that means has to be defined. But if you tell me that you're going to partner, the federal government first is not the most reliable partner. Second, if you tell me you're going to partner with the state and local governments, well, then you got to start leaving more of our money in our state. You've got to quit taking, making us a net giver where we get back 72 cents roughly on every dollar. It's got a whole bunch of buzzwords that looks like PhD or a master's graduate put this thing together to make it look like it whizzes and bangs and is going to do a whole bunch of stuff. But then you start to read into it more. I'll give you one. Provide states additional flexibility to toll existing interstates. Really? That's a Republican idea. And I know that you're going to hear from some of my colleagues who say it is. You know, user pays. That's a good idea. Well, you know what? This is more of a, to me, this is a social engineer or a human engineer that looks at human beings as units and starts to put them on a map and say, oh, you know, we need toll roads, we need sane lanes, we need metered ramps, we need roundabouts. And Andrew, you know how much I love those ridiculous roundabouts.
Roundabout.
Here's the thing. There's nothing in there specifically for interchanges. And if you guys have, if you'll recall, because we've discussed it, since I've been here, we have proposed the National Interchange Intersection Safety Construction Program, which would allow additional dollars to be made available on applications from states and local authorities to try and improve existing interchanges and intersections. And I'll give you a great example for people that are in the 6th Congressional District. If you drive up and down Highway 10, you've got a rail line that runs essentially parallel to Highway 10 all the way to St. Cloud, and you've got all these intersections that have that rail line almost right there that pose a real danger at times. We just had with the state a program or a project that was completed, I think, a year or two ago, Armstrong Boulevard. to try and solve one of those intersections. This is a big deal. But go beyond that. Go beyond that. It doesn't have anything in there. Where's the stuff about airports? Where's the stuff about rail in general across this country? Where's the stuff about our seaports that are way out of date? So you're not going to get somebody here in this office to tell you that I'm thrilled with this plan. I think it's, you know, you had to put something out there, but I think Bill Schuster, the chair of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee here in the House, and members of his committee like Jason Lewis, our own Minnesota representative, I think they have better details than what is in this bill. There are some good things, so I'm giving it a hard time, but they want to streamline the permitting process. They want to establish a one-agency, one-decision structure for the environmental reviews. That's a great idea. I mean, it's something we've been talking about in Minnesota for a decade. One-window shopping. You should not have to go to five different agencies of government and try to get through their morass of red tape to get these things done. They want to shorten the what is today a lengthy environmental process, review process. They want to shorten that down to 24 months and make sure that, you know, the government has to get these programs through. But again, I see things like the regulatory reform. They want to provide more flexibility to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Guys, the red flags go up all over the board when I see we're going to give more flexibility to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In fact, we should give less to them, and we should give more to local authorities who I would suggest know better how to handle the resources within their own communities than some faceless bureaucrat from Washington, D.C.
Talking with Representative Tom Emmer, we're going to get to a phone call here in just a second, but I did want to comment that everything that you just said spoke to the initial comments that we had on this bill, and that was, you know, when you've got this amount of money for something that's important, you really do have to go and put your faith and trust in the individuals who you've elected to go and represent you in Washington, because there's no way the average voter, taxpayer, is going to be able to work through all of this, and it's tough, because you want to go, well, I want to be able to trust the individuals that I voted for to go and make the right decision, and you laid out, again, you sort of like walked into the comment that we made, that it's a good thing that there are individuals like yourself and others who are looking at this and being critical of the way they're trying to go about it.
Well, it's interesting, and perhaps that's why I am in this office, because I do represent that voice. That's what I expect the majority of the people in my district would be saying to me. And frankly, I've got experience across the state. Here's the other one. Okay, so they want to put an emphasis on rural America, John. In Minnesota, how many people realize that our Constitution requires the gas tax be allocated according to the number of lane miles, not the highest use?
So wow.
What does that tell you?
Yeah.
That tells you the county, state aid highways, all of that. The reason that we have, and I'm going to suggest, and there are going to be people out there that are going to start pulling their hair out, we have great infrastructure in the state of Minnesota. Does it need to be improved? Does it need to be repaired? Does it need to be built anew? Absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, the population has grown. We want to get people and product moving around the state and across the state line.
More light rail is what you're saying.
That is what I was saying. My point is, okay, so this sounds good. Oh, we're going to invest all this money in rural America. That's great. That's great. But you know what rural America needs? Broadband. Rural America needs broadband. And that is in this bill, which is good. But you've got to stimulate that public-private partnership. And when you suggest stuff like this, it tells me you don't understand what every state's structure is. And that is even more important why the 10 members of Minnesota's delegation have to be razor sharp on what's in this bill and has to push back in this administration.
Tom,
so that we make sure it goes in the right place.
Representative Emmer, we've got a call, wants to give you a compliment. Eric from Ramsey. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, Mr. Emmer, in the first time for 7 or 8 years, I'm proud to hear you saying what I'm hearing today. To me, some of the worst words in the world are infrastructure and working families, not working Americans. And I know you'll do the right thing. And on your last comment, you were saying what the country, you know, what rural Minnesota needs is more broadband. No, what it needs is less MPR. period. End story.
I'm sorry, that just tickled my funny bone.
I don't know if you have that that authority to limit the reach of NPR into rural Minnesota. But we should look into that. Representative Emmer, thank you so much. I always enjoy our Friday conversations.
Hey guys, I can't wait to get back.
Have a great weekend.
Get those cross-country skis ready, boys.
All right, take care. Have a good weekend.
See ya.
Speaking of NPR, we do have an update on the source of Garrison Keillor's allegations. Ended up shocking those who were close to the radio host. We'll give you some details on that. We will get to the St. Paul contract, teacher contract details, and we'll get back into the tragedy that took place in Florida, the latest and the new information that came out from overnight.
The Friday Roundtable, three-legged roundtable this week is in the house with comedian Brian Miller. More coming up next right here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice in Radio is the easy-to-use app for music and radio. Download the free iHeartRadio app today.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew. Brianne filling in for Sam.
Hi.
Comedian Brian Miller.
Hello.
Three-legged round table today.
Yeah, I'm the third leg.
That's right. Yes, you are.
I've been called that before.
It's nice to see you this morning, sir. Got a story out of Star Tribune. Source of Garrison Keillor's allegations shocks those close to the radio
this
host.
This is the above-the-fold front-page story on the Star
Tribune. Yeah, this was big. Yeah. This is a big
Garrison
deal.
Garrison Keillor would grab it below the fold.
By the way, the audible groan you hear in the studio from behind me is my father, who's sitting in on the show this morning. Can we remind the round table that my father is actually sitting behind me while we do the show this morning?
Don't oppress him.
No, I'm not oppressing
him. I'm being repressed.
I thought it was a good idea that I place him behind me so I don't have to see him. Now I realize I've made a horrible mistake. The person who first accused Garrison Keillor of... Now look, hold on, let me see up front real quick. The way that they worded this whole thing, this is such clickbait. Because they put it above the fold, they worded it this way, because the way they make it sound is way more interesting than what actually happened. The person who first accused Garrison Keillor of inappropriate behavior wasn't a woman. It was an angry man. Turns out.
Which leads you to think.
Right.
A very specific thing.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's immediately what I thought. Yeah. I was like.
As opposed to like a guy who saw some untoward stuff going on and said, I should.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. It just changes the story.
It's a good first sentence. You got to get that.
It is.
I mean, it's.
It is.
But keeps you reading to the next one.
Yeah. It's designed specifically to lead you down a particular path, and then they are like, nope. Let's go over here.
Yeah. It's provocative.
It is very provocative.
It's a little M. Night Shyamalan-y.
There is a very good lesson to be learned from the story, though. So Dan Rolls is a close associate of Keillor's and a 16-year employee of a Prairie Home Companion. He spoke up after he was dumped from the show last summer and rejected a severance offer from Minnesota Public Radio, according to seven people who worked on the show.
It was a tote bag, by the way.
What's that?
The severance was a tote bag.
You know what? This is the thing. It was $30,000.
Well, that's a lot of tote.
They offered him a severance package of $30,000 when he left, and he refused to take it. So Rolls' disclosure triggered the internal and external investigations by Minnesota Public Radio. All of the alleged misconduct involved a longtime female writer of the show.
Mm. Right.
So now
this guy Dan Rolls was apparently privy to it, a witness to
right.
it, and he's the one that tipped off NPR that this was going on.
Hmm. Some of the staff members now accuse Rolls of exploiting the writer's pain in an effort to obtain a larger financial package. They note that the woman did not come forward with her own account until 2 months after Rolls told NPR officials of Keillor's alleged misconduct. The identity of the whistleblower stunned cast members and others who have been instrumental in the success of Prairie Home. They say they never witnessed any unpleasantness between Keillor and Rolls, who together were chiefly responsible for the show's creative content in recent years.
Well, that's good to hear, because I didn't think it was possible for one man to be that boring.
It takes a village.
It was a team effort
to make a village get sleepy.
So a bit of the backstory, because they go into a lot of detail in the article, so we'll just give you sort of the bullet points. In 87, Keeler retired from radio for the first time. Rolls was tapped to help write for Good Evening, created by NPR, to fill the slot left by Prairie Home. Over time, Rolls, sort of his status, his job grew and grew, so he took on more responsibility. When Keeler retired from the show in 2016, he recommended that the new show host, Chris Teal, promote Rolls to creative producer, a role which would supervise the writing of sketches while maintaining some of the 44-year-old show's traditions.
44-year-old jokes.
True story. Apparently, Chris Teal and Rolls didn't get along. They had two different opinions on what was funny. And Rolls was often second-guessing him, according to reports. So unhappy.
Turns out they were both wrong.
Right.
Two wrongs don't make a funny.
Unhappy with the show's artistic direction and concerned by the staff morale, Minnesota Public Radio informed Rolls in mid-August that he would not be invited back for a second season with Teal. Employees said he was offered the severance package. They went on to say that he was angry, said one person familiar with the matter. He then made some statements about Garrison that were surprising.
Wow. Now, that's the weird part. So it's like, if he'd gotten along with Chris Teal, would we never know about any of this?
Right?
Yeah.
That's a very strange...
If him and Teal would have had some rapport, would have worked well together, and been moving forward on the show perfectly fine, he would have kept all this information to himself.
Which, again, drives at the heart of sort of my takeaway on this. It's a really good example of being very careful with the people that you work around to get along with everybody, because you just, you know, especially if you're in a position where you may have done some things that were inappropriate that people might have knowledge
of. The first lesson is don't grope women. Don't grope people.
Don't be gross.
Don't be gross, right? The rule we rule the show by.
Rule number two, the Garrison Keeler rule, don't sing.
Don't sing.
Don't sing. For the love of God, don't sing. I'm going to sing a little time. That's my Garrison Keeler singing.
Sounded a little like Dayton.
Oh. Whoa. The choir. The Minneapolis choir. The mumble choir.
The
vocal
Keeler
essence.
And Dayton barbershop act.
Vocal in essence.
Oh, God.
By the way, in retrospect, does anybody really, truly miss Garrison Keeler?
No.
Or is it just, he's got a name, people know him, they liked Prairie Home at one point in time, and does anybody really genuinely care that all this happened?
I do think it's sad that, like, the kind of legacy is sort of tarnished, because like my grandpa and I used to listen to that show together.
Sure.
I liked that it existed. I liked that it was this pleasant thing, and I would listen to it for 15, 20 minutes at a time here or there, you know, but it is a bummer. And it is strange to think that maybe this woman who was the target of this didn't want this to happen.
Right. Right.
That's very strange, right? Like if she felt really strongly about it and felt like, you know what, this needs to be made known, then I'm like, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But if she wanted to be made known, and some guy was mad at Chris Teal, and
right.
So then he...
Well, the guy got fired and decided he was going to burn the place down as he got, you know, on his way out. I mean, that's what happened. He knew things that had gone on. He was privy to inappropriate behavior and was feeling bitter and angry and as if he was treated unfairly, and decided, you know what? Fine. You're going to fire me? Everybody, I'm taking everybody down with me.
Say maybe he had some better moral standing or long, but I see it's hard to put together with that.
I'm not giving this guy any credit. No,
it's hard to
give this guy any credit.
No,
he was perfectly willing to sit on this information. He knew about it.
Yeah.
He knew it was going on. He knew it was disgusting. It talks about how the emails, written messages, requests for sexual contact, it became threatening. When his advances were spurned, so he knew all this.
Yeah,
was
aware.
And I'm not saying I'm sat on it.
I'm not saying I wish it would have kept a secret just so I could continue remembering my afternoon drives with my grandpa. Like, that's still fine, but it is just strange to think about the circumstances. It's not. It's just not this direct one-to-one thing. It's this morass.
Going back to Don't Be Gross, putting it back on Keeler, it was not just this guy, but it was also the timing with the hashtag MeToo movement that I imagine probably gave this woman the extra courage to come forward now in light of what this individual brought forward, other thing happening.
Keep in mind, they came to her first.
Right. True. That's true.
Based on what this guy told
right.
the bosses at NPR.
I got you.
Yeah.
Interesting side note, and we'll get to the St. Paul contract and teachers giving up $1 million, but not really here in a moment, and the latest on the shooting. You mentioned It's a bummer that sort of Prairie Home Companion has this now tainted with Keeler on it.
It was already going away. Just
right,
let it go.
Right. There's a, I don't know if you guys have heard, but they're going to do a movie version. I think it's a kind of a biopic of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks is.
And yeah. Tom Hanks is playing Mr. Rogers. I heard somebody make an interesting comment. They equate, and I don't know how exactly they got there, but they were like, well, you know what? From what we know, Mr. Rogers was a very stand-up guy. He's got a really fascinating military background.
I've got my fingers crossed that that remains true.
Well, yeah.
Everybody, by all accounts, he appears to be a wonderful human being. So
I don't want that to change.
I know.
But twofold. Don't tarnish Mr. Rogers. And they said that if you were going to pick the perfect actor for it,
yeah,
it seems to be Tom Hanks, because as far as we know, he also is an individual who's been accused of anything ever.
Originally, Kevin Spacey was supposed to get the part.
I think that's fake. I think that's fake, Drews.
I said I didn't want to be your neighbor.
651.
That's not very neighborly, Mr. Spacey.
What, didn't he have a pup? No, it doesn't matter.
I'm just bummed that I can no longer refer to my space heater as Kevin Space Heater. I had to stop that this year. I've been doing that for years.
Tarnished the relationship.
I know. I always thought it was a fun thing. And then now it's kind of creepy. Now I have to call it Robin Wright Space Heater.
651-989-5855. Hashtag TCNT. Hashtag don't be gross. More of Justice and Drew coming up.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Your calls, 651-989-5855, or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but it is official now. Mitt Romney has announced that he is running for U.S. Senate out of the great state of Utah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had kind of thought it was going to happen. Yeah,
not a shock.
No, and he's going to win. I mean, there's there's the biggest, zero question about that, right?
The biggest surprise of this whole thing is that Mitt Romney's 70.
Really?
What?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Hey, clean living, man. That's an advertisement for clean living.
He looks good. He's a good-looking man for 70,
yeah.
Gotta say.
I think that's gonna really interestingly he's gonna have his own little faction, I think, is what some people in the White House are concerned about. You know, he becomes a de facto leader pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a power player. I mean, he's replacing Orrin Hatch, who's been there for 40 years. Orrin Hatch is a powerful senator. He's a leader. So yeah, it's not going to be like having some freshman senator coming in there and replacing. He's basically going to pick up, I think, where Orrin Hatch has left off.
Well, and I've seen a little because I saw sort of the emerging stories on this morning before it was official, and there was a comment made that he would kind of pick up where McCain will have eventually left off. Of the individuals you're going to put him with, you look at McCain, you look at Jeff Flake, you look at Mitt Romney. I'll say for me, while I've got my problems obviously with McCain and with Jeff Flake as of late, and Romney carries on a lot of the same thoughts that they have, of the three, I have the most respect for Romney. Romney's got my ear more than Jeff Flake or John McCain do. I question, is this just, again, we talked about it when it was brought up the first time. Is this just about this seat, or is this Romney getting kind of back into the game for future endeavors?
Like to seek higher office?
Yeah.
To
do it again.
I don't think so because of his age.
I don't
get that. Until you said that
sense either. I think, Romney's just going to sort of finish out his career in politics, holding this seat for...
Yeah, forever.
I mean, you think two terms puts him at 82.
Yeah.
The
other way to think about it is if he's trying to go national, he either challenges... If you're going to challenge Trump in 2020, which I thought was a... Depending on how things went, was a possibility. Because I think Romney's never been more popular. Right. Like, a lot of people, a lot of centrists and moderate types like myself look back and go, yeah, I'd be all right with that.
Yeah.
I really, you know.
Maybe,
but
maybe we should have let Romney win.
Yeah. But but then you go, but 2024, he's going to be too old. He's going to run at 76. That's pretty unlikely. And so I don't think you take the Senate seat if you're planning on trying to make that quick jump.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yep.
And it sounds like it could be just as simple as, you know, he wants to get back in. He doesn't like the way the things are. He's not happy with Trump, and he wants to make a difference how he can. I mean, it could just be that simple.
It could be, and it might not even be that. I mean, he's had his words with Trump. He's had his feuds with Trump, but we don't know that he's going to go in there and try to be sort of a counterbalance to Trump. Wait and see. We don't know.
Well, I just think I'm a big fan of Mike Murphy, who ran his campaign. And Mike Murphy is a fairly Mike Murphy doesn't like the direction that a lot that Trump and some of those people are pushing the Republican Party. And I think he and Mitt Romney are pretty closely aligned. They seem to be really tight. And so it wouldn't surprise me if Mitt was just trying to just kind of guide the party in some particular direction. I mean, that's good. You need leaders.
You know, everyone was surprised, and then we'll get to this St. Paul contract details. Surprised at Mitt Romney's age. You know the age that really caught me off guard the other day, for as stupid as it sounds? Jared Leto is 46.
Really?
That shocked me.
He still looks like he's 23.
Right? Like, I'm 45, and I was like, it gives me like a little bit of hope. he would be invited to my cool people's party. I would have
Jared Leto. Jordan Catalano? Never.
Jared Leto would absolutely be in my cool people's. You know, I would have Mitt Romney.
Really?
Before Jeff
Flake. At your cool people party?
Before Jeff Flake and John McCain.
I can think of a lot of positive superlatives that I would apply to Mitt Romney. Cool.
That's true.
Would not be one of them.
Oh, I think he is cool.
I would say his lack of coolness is what makes me like him.
Yeah.
You know?
There you go.
Yeah. You don't want your Boy Scout troop leader to be cool.
Right.
You want him to be a good Boy Scout troop leader.
Exactly. Eric in St. Paul. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. You had just talked about Orrin Hatch deciding to retire, and you had said some things about Orrin Hatch, and what crossed my mind is, why isn't he catching any splatter for this Porter problem that Trump is going through?
What sort of splatter would he catch? That's an odd word.
Yeah.
Orrin Hatch group. That's where he came from.
I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably why he's not catching any splatter.
Because we didn't know.
Really? I mean, that's where... okay. We've all been saying that in the news, that this guy came from the Orrin Hatch organization.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. All right.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks, Eric.
Yep.
Splatter.
That's a weird way. That is interesting, though. Had you read that anywhere? I've read a fair amount about this.
Yeah, I hadn't read that anywhere. I did read this morning that members of the St. Paul Federation of Teachers gave up some of their salary increases out of Pioneer Press and accepted larger class sizes in exchange for dozens of new hires in special education and English language instruction, according to the contract agreements made public yesterday.
You can't give up something that you don't have. You can't give up something that's not yours. You can't give up, future pay increases. That's not yours to give up.
But isn't that wouldn't that be part of the contract negotiations, though? Was it like, we're not going to hold firm on this argument for this if we get this other thing?
Yes. That's a fair way to frame it. But the way the story's being written, it makes it sound like the teachers are being so benevolent and sacrificing in order to, the union is getting what they want either way. Whether they get the salary increases or they get the new hires, it doesn't matter because it all means increased union dues.
Yeah, the headline is written, St. Paul contracted details, teachers giving up $1 million in pay to fund new positions. Like, when I read that, that's immediately what I thought. I was like, wow, they're giving up.
No.
They're giving up salaries? Well,
this is not some benevolent gesture on the part of the St. Paul Federation of Teachers. This is new hires are more valuable to them than higher pay for teachers, because with every new hire, you have a new union member.
Oh, sure. But it is kind of like business. Kind of like when businesses say, like, we lost this amount of money. And it's like, well, no, you made slightly less than you planned to make. When people report future and past money, it's fun the way they spin that.
It's all in the clever wording.
Yeah.
Lauren Cathy, the district's human resources director and lead negotiator, said the teacher agreement stayed within the 2-year, $4.1 million budget the district had set last fall. The amount would have been enough to raise teacher pay by 1% this school year and next. However, to help pay for other priorities,
which is more money for the union.
The union negotiators agreed to make their first 1% increase effective January 6th instead of the start of the current school year. Cathy said that freed up just over $1 million, although the savings to the district won't carry over into future years.
No, obviously. I would be curious to hear what individual teachers, if they thought of that, if their teachers are like, you know what, I'd rather have help than to have, a smaller amount of money, or if they were like, oh man, no, this sucks.
Yeah.
We're our raise. I'd be very curious, what.
I'd imagine most of them would take the raise.
This whole St. Paul teacher strike thing was really kind of bizarre in my, they seemed really, really fired up. And then they came to an agreement that seemed really, really sort of middle of the road, and nobody really got anything out of this deal. At least that was my impression.
I thought it was going to happen. I mean, I thought this was going to go down to the last couple of days. Yeah, it felt like everybody's poised for a fight, and then it was like, oh, we could have just done this yesterday.
Yeah, to me it speaks to, and Drew, you can speak to this better than I can, but to me it speaks to that power of the union in getting the teachers fired up, and then but to get something that really wasn't indicative of how fired up they were.
Right. Yeah. The end result, I don't think, benefits existing teachers all that much. The end result benefits. They use the teachers. They push the teachers. They say they're going to go on strike, and all just so that they can get, you know, more union members.
They did say larger class sizes. I can't imagine that's popular.
Well, it's only like one or two students.
Sounds like too many to me. As a guy who doesn't have kids, that sounds like a lot of kids.
Really depends on who those students are, man.
The agreement increases the class size ranges by one or two students, and that's only in middle and high schools.
All right, let's just shift gears back over to the continuing coverage. Florida gunman had extra ammo at school, fired for 3 minutes. Nicholas Cruz, this is the 19-year-old, said he brought more loaded magazines to the school and kept them in a backpack until he got to campus. The gunman moved through the school. He fired into 5 classrooms, 4 on the first floor, 1 on the second floor, according to the sheriff. The shooting lasted for 3 minutes. The assailant then went to the third floor, dropped his AR-15 rifle and the backpack, and then ran out of the building. He attempted to blend in with the fleeing students. After the rampage, the suspect headed to a Walmart, bought a drink at a Subway, before walking to a McDonald's. He was taken into custody 40 minutes after leaving the McDonald's. A day after the attack, a fuller portrait emerged of the shooter, a loner who had worked at a dollar store, joined the school's ROTC program, posted photos of weapons on Instagram, and at least one student said his classmates joked that Cruz would be the one to shoot up the school. The 19-year-old orphan, whose mother died last year, was charged with murder on Thursday in the assault that devastated the sleepy community on the edge of the Everglades. It was the nation's deadliest school attack since the gunman targeted the elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut, more than 5 years ago. The portrait that has emerged of this individual, I mean, it's... You already have an incredibly devastating situation, and then you look at the background on this kid and what everybody knew, and it just, I mean, it's, and I'm using horrible phrases here, but it adds insult to injury with this whole thing.
Yeah, it's even more stark than like the Adam Lanza scenario from Sandy Hook, where another person where like seemed fairly clearly disturbed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the weird thing, like the Columbine thing was more of a. I think that took a lot of people more by surprise than the media narrative would later come to, you know, later on they come to this whole trench coat mafia thing, which is kind of a fake construct. They were just kind of like, you know, sort of jerky kids.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that's the one more surprising. It's I don't know, is it worse when it's more surprising or when it seems more faded?
Yeah. I mean, it's troubling that, you know, we're in a culture now where preparing and having drills for incidents like this is becoming commonplace. I don't like that. That's what our kids have to keep in the back of their minds, especially when they're in a larger high school and larger metro areas and things like that. You know, I don't understand how the idea of shooting up a school has become such a thing among. He's, you know, a very small, granted, you know, segment, but people who have these really disturbed lives and decide that they're going to go out and commit an atrocity. Schools have become sort of the target of choice, and it's because it's a bit of a copycat phenomenon.
Well, and I was actually thinking about this quite a bit yesterday. Why it always seems to be schools so often. And unfortunately, the truth of it is it tends to be very young men. This tends to be disturbed men and young guys, you know, hormones raging. I mean, you know, that you're most sort of volatile and intense and angry. And so it seems to be these people who are probably maybe were going to be troubled 30-year-olds anyway, but they're already at this really intense peak. And so where are they familiar with?
They're
familiar
with school.
Where are they focusing their rage?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think
where have they spent a good portion of their life?
Yes.
Where have probably things happened that made them angry, that caused them to go down this path of rage, and they all place it at this one place where they've spent a good chunk of their life and they've had a problem. probably a lot of negative experiences.
And to what you mentioned a moment ago, Brian, when you talk about what is bringing them to the point where they're going and doing this, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's just this is what they're familiar with. So, you know, what's the biggest target where I can do the most damage? It's the thing that I already know.
Yeah, and it tends to be young white males.
Right.
So you go, where does an 18-year-old white male hang out? Well, he hung out at high school until very.
So if we are going to if we're going to buy into, without getting into the numbers, if we're going to buy into and just sort of readily admit that we've had a ramp up of higher frequency of these school shootings, why is it happening? And I personally believe you have two different things that have grown exponentially going back to Columbine, which kind of kicked this off. You have the media coverage, which now has a very distinct and specific way that they cover these stories and how they keep them alive for however long they feel like they need to keep them alive. You have the ability to track the data now better than you ever have before. So these media outlets now all know this is going to get us X amount of viewers. This is getting us X amount of clicks on online.
That's gross to think about.
But it's true. And so they've now got a system in place. And I'm not saying, and I don't think it's anything that they're sitting behind in some star chamber mapping this out. I just think it just happens to be what has emerged.
It evolves.
Mm-hmm. On top of that, why are the kids choosing to go this route as opposed to say, and I don't mean to be insensitive, like taking their own lives? Well, we now live in a world where you do not have to be an actor or a rock star to be a celebrity. You just have to go to YouTube. And I'm not being the guy saying, hey, it's all YouTube's fault. I'm just saying that if we're going to have a conversation about fixing the problem, then let's start to identify what is driving a lot of this and the frequency of this. And in my opinion, it is the, you know, expanded social networking and the media coverage that covers these events.
Right. Well, and we need to have the conversation. I mean, we know that this is a thing. We know that this is something that has entered sort of the cultural subconscious of, you know, bad people want to do a bad thing. There's a great likelihood now that they're going to go target a school. We need to have the conversation about security in schools. We need to have a very real and frank conversation about what steps are being taken to protect our kids in these schools. I get really frustrated when, you know, you bring up the idea of having trained armed personnel at schools and people act like you've just suggested the most heinous thing out there.
I believe the school had an armed officer on staff who never encountered the shooter.
Yeah, I haven't been able to find out exactly what
I don't know if that's 100% true, and that's actually to my point. I recommend you guys and everybody out there read this book. It's an amazing book, one of the best ones I've ever read. Dave Cullum, a journalist, wrote a book called Columbine. He was on the scene at Columbine, first reporting it when it happened in Colorado, and 10 years later, he goes back because he realized that everyone was trying to get everything right, but in the frantic rush of that for everybody to figure out what's going on, these narratives start to construct themselves, and then one slight misreporting piles on top of another slight misreporting, these ideas get locked in, and so he breaks down the truth of what really happened at Columbine, not in a conspiratorial way, the main facts that we know, but like the notion of the trench coat mafia, how organized was it, all these things that you know, had gotten in people's minds, and you don't realize how early those narratives set in, and so you still see the media rushing to fill the story in as fast as they can, and so in these first couple of days, be very hesitant about anything that you hear until, you know, people have time to really vet all this information.
And we have actual examples of that very thing happening with this particular story, with some storylines that emerged yesterday that started to grab headlines that have been quickly debunked in a matter of 24 hours. 651-989-5855. We're going to get to your phone calls coming up. Those on hold, do not go anywhere. Also, on a lighter note, I'm very excited because I haven't heard it yet. We do have the parody song contest coming
up. That's right. The prize this week is a $150 gift card to Peter's Billiards. We'll give you a preview of the parody song contest coming up towards the end of the next segment, and we'll do it at 8:35. Justice.